This is 91.5 FM, WOBC, Oberlin College and Community Radio. I am Mike the DJ, and my guest this week on my show, The Future Is Now, is Kelsey Burnham.
Hi, my name is Kelsey Burnham. I'm 24 years old. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, and I play flutes and recorders.
Okay. What are some of your earliest musical memories or experiences?
Well, I didn't actually start until I was in sixth grade. A lot of people, they get their instruments or at least some instrument really young on, but I was raised by my grandmother who was a hairdresser. So when I was really young, I remember begging for lessons. Oh, well, so-and-so has piano lessons, you know, all of these people have other lessons or dance or something, and we just couldn't afford it. So when I was in sixth grade, I was really lucky. I was able to join band through my middle school. And so my earliest memories are my band director, who's like a second mom to me now, giving me my flute and me just taking it and being completely enamored with it and running with it as fast as I possibly could. I was about 11.
Mm-hmm. Now, was the flute your choice or were you assigned that as an instrument?
So I originally signed up for violin. All of those years of begging for lessons, I mostly wanted to learn violin. Mm-hmm. My band director, Danny, sat me down. She's like, I'm sorry, we don't have any violins left this year. There's nothing left in orchestra. What would you like to do in band instead? And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm not sure. Let's see. I don't want to play the clarinet because that's what Squidward from SpongeBob plays, and he's not very good at it. So, you know, I love the clarinet now as an instrument, but I had a pretty bad impression of it as a child. And so I remember saying out loud, well, the flute is the pretty one, right? I guess I'll take that one. I'll try that one out. And I didn't really look back after that.
Interesting. Can you describe your musical education from the time when you started playing with the band?
Absolutely. So after about a year when I was in seventh grade, my band director sat me down. She told me, I'm sorry, I have some terrible news for you. I'm actually a clarinet player. She said, I can't teach you anymore. I feel like I've done everything that I can. But there's this program at Peabody called Tuned In, which just started. There's about 10 kids in a band in a very small classroom at Peabody getting free lessons and free ensemble experiences every week. It was directly geared towards low-income Baltimore City students. So I ended up joining that. Completely loved it, got lessons for the first time, was taking initially 30-minute lessons up to 45-minute long lessons. And when I was in eighth grade, I heard about the Baltimore School for the Arts, which is a public arts high school located in Mount Vernon, literally just two blocks from Peabody. So everything was very condensed, pretty much in the same space. And I ended up auditioning for the arts high school and getting in. So I was able to do Baltimore School for the Arts Monday through Friday, completely busy from like 8 in the morning until 4:30 p.m. And then Saturdays spend basically 10 in the morning until 6 p.m. at Peabody. So that was my middle and high school experience, and I ended up going to Oberlin Conservatory for my undergraduate. Mm-hmm. I was originally a modern flute and computer science double major. took 5 years there and changed my degrees a couple of times, and so I ended up leaving with a historical performance and flute degree, a Baroque flute performance degree, and now I'm currently in my second year of my master's at Juilliard, doing the same degree program.
Wow. At what point did your interest shift from playing modern flute to historical performance?
So I didn't really know anything about historical performance or pretty much any music before 1800 by the time I got to college. Mm-hmm. Completely obsessed with the 19th century, and I loved orchestral music, but the Baroque flute was something that was completely out of my field of vision. I had no idea what it was. But my second year of college, I had actually dropped my flute major. I was really concerned, you know, two majors was too much for me. I was really discouraged. I didn't feel like I was doing very well at flute. I was constantly busy. I was working two jobs at that time just to be able to afford to be there. Mm-hmm. And while I was just a college major, I started working with my modern flute teacher again to try to get back in the conservatory. But at the same time, I couldn't take very many classes. So she sits me down and she goes, you know, you could take Baroque flute lessons from Michael Lynn. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I love flute. Yeah, sure, why not? It might be really fun. And after about a semester, we had decided, how about you audition as a Baroque flute major? And the audition was actually really sweet. I spent all of this time preparing all of this music. Michael sits me down for my lesson. We play through everything. And he goes, okay, that was it. That was your audition. You're in. And I was like, you mean if that were my audition, I'd be fine. And now I have to play for the panel, right? And he was like, no, you'll be my student. They can trust me. They don't need to hear you. So it was really, really comfortable and really a great experience, the start of a great friendship and relationship with Michael.
Yeah, that's amazing. That sounds like a great situation to be in, where you'd be, you know, more relaxed and more able to show, you know, able to show your true skills in that. Now, did you continue on the Baroque flute, or did you switch to the recorder, or do you do both? Of them currently?
I do both of them currently. So my, I think starting in my third year, that January, my first year as an official Baroque flute major, I was already ready for more instruments. And I took a January term with Michael, and he taught me romantic flute, keyed flute, for the first time. Completely loved it. And soon enough, I found out, well, you could do really well as a Baroque flutist or an early flutist if you can double. And so that following year, my fourth year, I decided, you know, I want to take secondary recorder lessons. I'll keep up a romantic flute. I'll learn classical and Renaissance. But let's see what happens if I start the recorder. And within about a month, Michael, in one of my lessons, was like, you know, most people aren't very good at this when they start, but you're not bad. Maybe you should minor in it. Right. And so I did an accelerated minor. I added a minor in my last 2 years of college on recorder. And so I do both now. At school, I'm officially just a Baroque flute performance major for my master's at Juilliard as well, but I do have the undergraduate minor in recorder performance.
How did you end up selecting Juilliard to go to grad school?
So I had a couple of places on my list, but I absolutely loved Sandy. Sandra Miller is the historic flute professor there, and she's just phenomenal. And within meeting her, I think the summer before my auditions, I knew very well that we would work together, and I really wanted to audition for her. And the same thing when I went to Oberlin for my audition, I kind of had a feeling when I was there visiting, like, if this is where I go, I feel like this is a good choice. Like, there's kind of something good about this, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity. The program has been a lot of fun, even despite, you know, COVID kind of getting in the way.
Right, I'm sure. Now, this is this show is for WOBC, which is Oberlin College's radio. So what are some of your fondest memories of Oberlin College?
Oh, I have so many. So I actually worked at the subway in the town of Oberlin for like all five of my years there. And so it was so much fun to see my friends come in from the conservatory or even the college, and I would serve them their favorite sandwiches and everything. So everyone kind of knew me as like the subway girl in the conservatory, because none of the other people working there were students. So that was great.
Right.
Afternoons and tap-in on really beautiful fall days. Like, the weather there is just like nothing else. Really cold winters and snow.
Right.
I mean, it's a beautiful town. I loved it so much for the 5 years that I lived there.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Depending on what years they were, you were there, you might have run into me there, because I definitely am a Subway fan.
It's possible.
This is not a paid endorsement, by the way. This is
of course not. I don't work for them anymore.
This is just conversation. What are some of your most memorable musical experiences?
Oh, wow. I think one of my most memorable music experiences is definitely from my second semester of my junior year of high school. And that was really significant to me because that September prior, my grandmother passed away. And my grandmother was my mom for all intents and purposes.
Oh,
nice. She raised me entirely. She was easily like the most important person to me in my entire life. And so I spent that whole year struggling as just a 16-year-old, like really not knowing what I was doing in life, really being, you know, young and not sure how to deal with all of these things. But being in orchestras at school and at Peabody really, really saved me. And I had a really wonderful opportunity to play Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun with the Peabody Youth Orchestra that spring semester. And that in itself is just such a special opportunity, but it was one of my first performances where I felt like I took control and was still playing for my grandmother, even though she wasn't actually in the audience that time. So that's one that like is just always going to be really special to me.
I'm wearing a mask to protect you. Oh, I don't have COVID. At least, I don't have symptoms. I'm out and about, so I can't know for sure until it's too late, and I've passed the virus on to you and my other friends. Nobody can be sure. That's why we should all wear masks.
This is WOBC 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. That was Great Train Race for solo flute, performed by Jasmine Chow, composition by Ian Clark. Up next, more of the interview with Kelsey Burnham. This is The Fluture Is Now. My name is DJ Mike, or Mike the DJ. Much like flutist or flautist, You can call me either or either.
Are there any obstacles you faced throughout your career as a musician?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually didn't even get into Baltimore School for the Arts the first time I auditioned. They were only taking one flutist that year, and I was the top of the wait list. I didn't find out until I think the beginning of August, right before school was started. I had my uniforms for a different school and everything, and that was super, super discouraging. But when I had quit the flute in college, you know, when I'd gotten rid of my flute major officially, that was probably the hardest time in my entire career. Maybe almost as much as COVID, maybe more so, just because I really had that moment of, I know what it is I want to do in life. I know that I love the flute and it's what I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm not doing it right now. And I found myself for the first time in my life. I mean, I'm a flute player. We're very type A people, right? We're very like on top of things. And I was unable to get out of bed for class in the morning. You know, I was like completely unable to do anything besides what I called procrasta practicing, which was the kind of practicing you do when all of your stuff around you is like pressing and you have deadlines, and instead you would rather just play the flute. So that was really hard for me to come back from. But being able to join Oberlin Conservatory again as a Baroque major and really find my voice through Baroque music and other early music really was the only thing that got me through that. It was definitely very difficult.
Do you strictly perform historical flutes now, or do you do any playing on the modern flutes as well?
Yeah, I still stay on modern flute. Actually, especially while I was at Oberlin, I must have done maybe 25 or so premieres of student composed work. Probably way more performances than that because of, you know, second premieres and third premieres. But I do still play on modern. I just recently did a recording for a young woman from NYO. The Northern Ohio Youth Orchestra. NOYO, there we go. I'm dyslexic, so I'm very bad with acronyms. But that was to help her with her college auditions. That was a piece that she had written for solo flute. So I'm still doing a lot on modern flute. I collaborate with a friend who is a composer at Northwestern right now, and she writes solo flute works for me, and it's just been an amazing experience. I really truly love all flutes. Plenty of people ask me, oh, you do early flutes now. Like, aren't you so glad you don't play that terrible modern metal thing? And I'm always like, oh my gosh, but I love that one. What are you talking about? Yeah. They're all great. They're all special in their own way.
Right. No, I can understand that. Do you have any advice for music students? Maybe people that are currently enrolled in a conservatory or high school students that are thinking of going to and majoring in music.
Absolutely. Well, my number one piece of advice to anyone, regardless of age, is just to take care of yourself. I feel like a lot of the conversation around becoming professional musicians these days are, well, can you do it? Like, can you put in this much work? Are you going to be able to handle it? It's really hard out there. And I think the truth is that it's hard no matter what field you pick, and that, you know, if you're going to take care of yourself and be in good health, both mentally and physically, you're going to be in a much better place to succeed than if you were doing, you know, otherwise, by not sleeping and not taking breaks and things like that. I recently gave a lecture to the kids of Peabody. We did a historic instrument slideshow. This was all virtual. We did an ornamentation workshop, and right after that, we had about an hour-long Q&A session with about seven of the tuned-in kids who would have been just like me, you know, like low-income kids thinking about what their future is going to hold in the next couple of years. And once again, I was so surprised by the advice to them immediately. This girl says, I get really frustrated when I practice, and I know I shouldn't, and that's bad, but it makes me not want to play. And I said, why are you punishing yourself for being human? That's not bad. I have days that I get frustrated. I'm 24 years old, and I have days where I have to say, maybe this isn't the day in the practice room. But I told her, if you just take a break and you just do something else for 10, 15 minutes and come back to it, you'll be much better off, like, having self-soothed and done some brain, just, like, sleep or something that's not just, like, hitting yourself over the head with it. And I feel like a lot of kids are told a lot, well, just hit yourself over the head with it and get it done. It's fine. And I don't think that's true at all. I really think that the earlier kids are told and can understand that self-care will get you much further than you think, it might be a bit easier for them just to practice and get to school and function.
Right. That had to be an awesome experience going back to the program that you were a part of, and being how would I say this, being, you know, perceived as a role model or a mentor for them. Can you describe what that was like going back?
Oh, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. It was so funny when we started initially with the lecture slideshow that I put together myself. I made it interactive. I wanted these kids to see the historic instrument and guess, what is this thing? What do you notice about it? And I started from really easy. We started with Baroque violin, which for people who don't know, looks exactly like a violin, minus the chin rest, and the bow is a little bit more curved. We ended with the serpent, which people should definitely Google because it is actually the predecessor of the tuba, and it looks exactly how you would look. It looks like a giant snake. And I was amazed. There was a girl who played tuba, and she guessed, is that a tuba? It looks like one to me. She was the only person. But it was so incredible. The first thing that the ensemble manager said was, this isn't a very talkative bunch, so good luck. But by the end of the first hour, it was clear that the kids were very interested, really did want to participate. And that was just such a great experience for me, because I can remember being in high school and sitting through these lectures, even in person, and kind of wishing, oh man, it'd be nice if I were practicing right now.
Sure, absolutely. Well, if you must have skill in this if you made PowerPoint interesting. That's the only thing I can say. I have to say, I do enjoy looking in books of old music, and you see these things that look like they're Dr. Seuss creations. You know, it's like, what is that that has something you blow in on one end, and then, you know, you have a horn on the other end, you know, and it's just some crazy stuff. So it's pretty cool. Do you have any other interests other than music?
Yeah, actually, I really love video games. Ever since I was a kid, my first video game system was a gift from my grandmother. It was a Game Boy, not even color. It was just a Game Boy. I must have been 5 or 6 years old. And as a child, I absolutely loved video games. I grew up as an only child. I have half siblings, but we didn't grow up together. I spent a lot of time by myself then, and kind of passing the hours reading as well, but video games were something that I could always escape to. And when I started flute, I actually started transcribing some of the music by ear from the video games, because I just loved it so much. I would listen to it constantly, and I would want to play it. But even today, I have my Nintendo Switch in my room. I'm considering a PlayStation 5, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm a huge video game nerd.
Now, what I have to ask, what are some of your favorites?
Absolutely. So currently, my game of quarantine has obviously been Animal Crossing, that came out in March, and I grew up on it. It's been very, very sweet, but some of the stuff I grew up playing was also lots of JRPGs, stuff like Kingdom Hearts or Persona. I like the classics too. I like Legend of Zelda. I actually have a replica of the Ocarina of Time from Legend of Zelda.
I believe I saw that on your Facebook page. You played something.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I've been posting on my Instagram videos of me playing some of the songs from Zelda. And it's been so much fun to do that during quarantine.
I am probably not as big a video game fanatic as a lot of people are, but my field is computer science, and it's almost part of the rule that you have to be somewhat into video games, or they won't let you practice programming, I don't think, if you're not a bit of a video game fan. What video game do you feel has the best music? What music do you like the best?
So I have almost the entire Kingdom Hearts soundtrack on my phone. I think it's so beautiful. I used to do my homework while listening to it. Video game music is actually, for the most part, composed so that it helps you focus. It's supposed to be like the most best definition of background music, something that helps you focus, something that doesn't distract, but is pleasant and enjoyable and enhances the experience. And Kingdom Hearts just has a soundtrack that I could listen to one of those songs, and it takes me right back to exactly what painful scene was happening. It can make me very emotional. Just very diverse and interesting music.
It almost seems to me like this is, my own sort of outsider's viewpoint, that this is almost getting to be like film music was, whereas film music maybe initially was considered, well, it's just in the background, and now it seems to be a genre and a style in its own right. And I think video game music is kind of moving in that direction, the way it's being perceived. I see a lot of younger people play a lot of video game music, and it seems like it's pretty cool. How has COVID changed your art and your practice, or your however you want to put it, your education, your music?
Of course. So I think for everyone in the entire world, COVID has done something to them. Just like every other musician, I've lost some gigs from it. I'm in a fortunate situation. I work for an online lesson giving service that two of my friends started from Launch U at Oberlin called Virtue Academy. We started in 2017, and I've had a couple of students over the years, nothing too overwhelming. And then as soon as COVID hit, I started getting all of these brand new students. And I think from the months I sat down and I calculated this, I think I taught over 200 lessons from the time COVID had started through maybe the end of the summer. I'd had so many students and I was teaching constantly. So I'm very fortunate that I'm getting a lot of teaching experience online during a time where it's very hard for all of us to get work. But it is very hard not performing. Performing has always been my favorite part of playing the flute, if not playing with other people. So as an extroverted person, it's super hard to have to kind of live with the fact that right now I can only really play with people virtually, or I can be at home and I can record myself and play with myself. But otherwise, there's not too much for me to do. In terms of practicing, I really shifted my focus. I mean, I had to finish my first year of my master's online, and it gave me a ton of extra time because I had no rehearsals. But I found I had a hard time practicing in the sort of focused way that you do when you have performances. I found that it was hard for me to focus on one piece at a time and set a goal versus kind of allowing myself to get back into playing for fun. You know, when I was in middle school, it's not like I got good because I practiced a lot. Mm-hmm. I had gotten good because I just played a lot. I really didn't understand practicing or what, you know, who does when they just start their first couple of years. But giving myself the space to, at any given time, pick a flute or pick a recorder or pick whatever and play something that's just for fun and enjoyable, I think that's been something I can at least be a little thankful for, despite all of the craziness going on.
Do you have certain go-to pieces that are your, I want to have fun, I'm going to play this, or a certain style? Or
absolutely. So all of quarantine, I've been super into romantic flute duets, like Kulau or Forstenau. And I actually was introduced to these pieces by my flute teacher. We've been doing romantic flute club since the beginning of April. And we figured out that if one person has a metronome on and plays their part and everyone else mutes, the people who are muted can then play the first part and you can hear both parts. It's almost like you're playing with another person.
Okay.
And these pieces are so charming and so adorable. If you can think of every 19th century cliche that there is, they're all there. There's six volumes of them. So if I have a day that I just, you know, I want to do something for fun, I will set up, I'll grab my phone, I'll record the second part of maybe an entire movement, and I'll play on top of that. And it'll just be something for fun.
Mm-hmm. Free children's coats from the Lorain County Community Action Agency. No one in the county should go without a coat if we can help it. Coats are now available to anyone in Lorain County living at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. Go to lccaa.net/programs/operation_warm to complete a coat request. Proof of eligibility will be required. All pickups will be contactless. Parents are encouraged to order the next size up to ensure the coats fit. Questions should be directed to Amy Steele at 440-204-3121 or email her at astelle@lccaa.net.
This is WOBC 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. We're going to have a piece up next, Emmanuel Pahud playing Bach's Flute Sonata in E minor. Following that, we'll have the conclusion of the interview with Kelsey Burnham.
Thank you.
What sort of collaborations have you done? You mentioned the Romantic Flute Club. Are there other collaborations that you've done during this COVID time?
Yeah, so Juilliard's moved our chamber music online. So that's been interesting, doing chamber music online and recording generally from the bottom, the basso continuo part up. So I'm normally the last person to record, if not the second to last person to record. That's been a ton of fun to be able to work on that. It's very interesting having to be so married to a metronome, because the second that you go away and deviate from that, we find that it's very hard to pick up on our natural tendencies to shift otherwise. But another thing that I'm actually working on is really exciting. Juilliard is hosting Claire Chase as a guest artist, and I got to perform with her last year and a whole bunch of really amazing musicians from Juilliard and from ICE. We did a 16 person piece by Alvin Lussier, and it was really amazing having all 16 of us. It was four voices, four different instrument types, and the flutists, we all got to play alto flute. So it was a really fun and great experience, and Claire has invited as many flute players as she could possibly find to premiere another piece that we've been working on. So that'll also be hopefully on my Facebook quite soon, and we're doing recordings for that now.
No, I'll be looking forward to that. What are some of your other future projects that you are pondering, considering, lining up?
Well, I have so many ensemble things I really want to do, of course. I think everyone kind of has dream pieces in their brain right now that they're like, oh my gosh, if I could play with other people and do whatever I want, this is what I would do right now. In a more focused sense, I'm planning a recital that I'm trying to figure out whether or not it's going to be virtual or in person yet. And I was just telling my friend the other day, I have ideas for dream pieces or like what my dream setup would be for the recital. I'm just not quite sure it's going to happen. Like, I would love to play the C.P. Bach D minor concerto. That was my first piece of Baroque music when I was in seventh grade, and it left a huge impression on me. It was the first piece that I played that was really powerful in the low octave and was really entirely different from a lot of the other flute concerti that I'd heard at that time. I really wanted to play a Vivaldi Sopranino Concerto. I had the wonderful opportunity last year. We played, we did Handel's Rinaldo, and it has this little 5-minute aria between a soprano and a sopranino, which is the tiniest little recorder, which is all entirely birdsong. And I completely fell in love with the instrument. It is so much fun. And those concertos, they're like the piccolo concertos that most people think of, are just so charming on that instrument. So those are the things that are floating in my head. But more stereotypical things, I would love to just sit down with a group of people and go through as many Telemann Paris quartets as possible right now. Those have been on my mind as well.
Right. Now, you mentioned the sopranino. There's the recorder comes in a full range of instruments. So you play all of those typically, or?
I will play on alto. I have lots of them here. I have lots of different ones. Mm-hmm. I've done Renaissance recorder consort, which is great. You get to do soprano, alto, tenor, and bass, and we would switch parts. Mm-hmm. Bass was actually my favorite to play. I think it's because I cannot play the bass Renaissance flute to save my life. It is just physically too big for me. Very small hands, and the thing is like as big as a small child. It's just so harsh. But the Renaissance bass recorder, on the other hand, is just barely not too large for me, and so that's one that I really enjoy playing. But I spend a lot of my time on the higher recorders, so I play a lot of alto. I love playing soprano recorder. There's a lot of really great there's a whole collection by Van Eyck that is just all variations on popular themes of that time, all for soprano recorder, that he improvised. And sopranino is so charming. It is just one of the most charming instruments that I've ever played, that it just makes me want to play it more.
Who are some of your favorite musicians, either in terms of composers or in terms of musicians, players?
So one of my all-time like flute idols is Emmanuel Pauhud. Mm-hmm. I've really looked up to him since I was a kid. The first flutist I was ever really, really enamored with was definitely my flute professor when I was in seventh and eighth grade, Rachel Cho. She was Peabody faculty for the preparatory And that was the first time I'd ever heard someone in person who knew how to play the flute. And I remember standing there and just thinking so badly, like, I want to chase that. That's exactly what I want to sound like someday. I thought she had this gorgeous sound. And through her, I discovered Jasmine Choi's recording, and its recordings, I really loved her sound as well. So Jasmine Choi and Emmanuel Pauhut are two people who's, I really trust all of their recordings. I really love them. I love listening to them for fun. I love different styles that they offer. And watching their master classes, I think they're amazing. I really look up to Marina Piccinini. Mm-hmm. She's one of the professors at Peabody. Mm-hmm. And so I got to hear her play in a master class and play live a couple of times when I was growing up. And she was someone who I really, really was just amazed by. So very local too, very cool to be by. I also grew up loving orchestra. When I was in high school, I almost exclusively would listen to orchestral pieces. Especially, I love Beethoven symphonies, Tchaikovsky symphonies, Rachmaninoff, Sibelius. It didn't really matter to me a lot of the time if there was necessarily the best possible flute part or whether a flute part was very show-offy or anything like that. I really loved the ensemble experience of playing an orchestra and being with other people and like contributing to this total sound. And so another thing I've been doing during quarantine is I call it flute karaoke. And you just find a recording of a piece that you love and you just pull up your own part and you just play along with it. And that's been super enjoyable for me.
Wow. Do you have any other sort of parting words for our listeners? Anything that maybe that you would want to speak on that you haven't had the opportunity to talk about?
I would just say, half the time, if someone tells you that you can't do it, they're either scared that you can, or you're now presented with the opportunity to prove them wrong. I really feel like I grew up in a place where me playing flute and being a professional musician was kind of crazy. And a lot of people thought it was kind of crazy for a lot of reasons, but I stuck to my guns and I pulled through. And I think no matter what, if we really love something, we should just go for it.
Thank you.
This is WOBC 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. What we had there was the first and fourth movements of Sonata No. 3 by Louis-Gabriel Guillaumin, and that features Anna Besson from the ensemble Nevermind, who Kelsey Burnham mentioned to me was one of her influences. This is Mike the DJ. This is 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. And the name of this show is The Fluture Is Now, where we showcase flutists and or flautists and music that they most of the time have chosen on their own. In this case, Kelsey Burnham chose all the selections that were played on this show. This is, I believe, the last live show of the semester. And I believe I'll be picking this back up in January. I have already had a number of great interviews recorded. So until then, happy fluting.